Hey everybody, you're listening to the Creative Pep Talk Podcast. This show is about commercial art, making a good living, and making great art. I'm your host, Andy J. Miller. Our syndicate is Illustration Age. You can find the show at illustrationage.com/creativepeptalk. Let's get in. All right, guys, man, I am so thrilled to bring you this episode. Seriously, this is one of the best interviews that I've ever recorded. So, in the month of August, I spent a weekend at the Ghost Scout Training Camp. This is run by Dan Bandit, and that's who the interview is with, aka Ghost Shrimp. He is the original background designer for Adventure Time. He created the universe, you know, the treehouse, the whole world of those first two seasons, this iconic universe of Adventure Time. This is the guy who created the universe. And this guy is phenomenal, extremely inspiring, and he puts on this Ghost Scout training camp all of the month of August, where he brings out the cadets, around nine folks, I think, to come out and build forts and exercise and hike and draw and draw and draw and spend time with the guests. So he had me out this year. He also had Kent Osborne, who's the head writer of Adventure Time, Kent's brother, Mark Osborne, who was the director of Kung Fu Panda and The Little Prince and all kinds of other things. And yeah, so I got to meet Kent. I wasn't there for Mark being around, but I got to meet Kent, spend some time with him. He was hilarious and inspiring. And I got to have this long conversation with Dan on the last day before I left, and it was just full of creative genius. This guy is the real deal. He's got such a good heart for creative people, and I was just really, really inspired by this guy's ability to create not just the universe of Adventure Time, but his own universe that plays by his own rules. And yeah, I'm sure you're going to take away so much good creative wisdom from this talk. So just to give you a little background on the old Ghost Scout training camp, these guys go out there for the whole month of August. At the end, you get a code name, you get you get on the website roster, you get to join the online work sharing group, and you get to come back for the annual Ghost Scout Summit as a counselor or a resident, or just to hang out with the friends. It's really, really phenomenal. It was, I'm sure, life-changing for a lot of these people. It's like a really intensive period of time where you're intertwining your mental, physical, creative self into this ball of energy and work. And it was just, you know, I only spent a handful of days out there, but it made a big impact on me. And so I know you're going to love this interview. Check it out with my man, Dan Bandit, aka Ghost Shrimp. Here we go. And just a warning, if you've got little kids around or it's not your thing, there is some graphic language, so beware. You've been warned.
Yeah, just busted out.
I'm recording.
All right, perfect.
It'll be able to pick up everything in here.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
So I, for some reason, got this itch. I started working on this album cover with my buddy Factor, who we've worked together for like decades. And he had this project where he had this photograph that he wanted to work with, and he wanted to do something kind of more experimental with it. And I said, well, yeah, send me the photograph, and then maybe I'll do like an alternate reality version of the photograph, and then we can do some kind of see-through thing. Mm-hmm. And so that turned into this.
That's
and
awesome.
That was just like a just total immersion where, you know, I just was like just working and reworking and reworking this illustration for at least a month, you know.
I mean,
this is also like building my house in the morning and hanging with the kids. So my, you know, my life is, you know, a little particular in my schedule, but just cranking on this and just sitting down and reworking it till everything,
it's amazing,
everything was really perfect. And then that got me really hungry, because I was like, wow, this is the best drawing I've ever done. And then and then I was like, all right, now I gotta top it. And I was like, the next drawing is gonna be better, guys.
Gosh, these are
and
so good.
I forgot to bring up, I have this one colored. But this was the next one I did. And then this was the last one that I just did. So I've gone on this epic quest of just trying to just destroy, you know, just push myself so far. And, you know, I ended up working on this one for 6 weeks and this one for 6 weeks. And, you know, it's like, it's totally ridiculous because this is like a $600-$800 album cover. But, you know, and also I'm working on them at the same time too. Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I'm working on them at the same time, too. So I'll overlap projects. That's something I learned when I was working on Adventure Time.
Yeah.
Because I was freaking out. I had never, you know, coming in as an illustrator, I've been used to working like 3 to 7 days on an illustration. You know, most editorial stuff is like Friday to Monday, stuff like that.
Yep.
So I was coming out, you know, spending at least 3 days working on an illustration. And then they were like, well, yeah, this is great. We'll give you the job. But, like, you need to show us that you can do the speed. And I was just like, oh my God, there's no way. It's just freaking out of my mind. But I was like, I can't lose this opportunity. So it literally came down to one weekend where I was literally either going to get the Adventure Time job or go home to here, you know, from LA, like just like a failure. So, you know, I just dug deep and I totally freaked out. And I was able to figure out, I blew up the storyboard panel and taped it behind my picture. And instead of drawing with pencil, normally my process is to draw with pencil and do tons and tons of erasing and just really dig in for that hidden illustration in that page. And then so instead of that, since my mind was trained that way, I was like, all right, I'm just going to sit down. I'm going to blow up the storyboard panel behind the background page that I'm working on. Mm. And I'm just going to attack it straight with a pen, you know, I don't have the chance to erase. And I did have like a whiteout pen with me, but it's still it just, you know, the permanence of the line kind of just like made my mind just be more accurate. And I was able to bang out a background in, you know, half a day or something, which still you need to be able to do it faster than that. But it was a total breakthrough. And I was like, yes. And I went in and I was like, guys, I did this in like a matter of hours. And they're like, and they're like, let's do this.
Oh, so,
you know, it's funny. The rest is kind of history. Actually, in the Adventure Time backgrounds,
you could
flip through, but I have the tests that I was doing. And one of them, these were the sort of tests that I was doing for the show. So you can see these are definitely like 3 day, you know, how I would approach an illustration before I would ink it. And so this was the first iteration of the Candy Kingdom. And then this was the second one. And this is based, they digitally inked this. And I think they might have added some trees in here, but this is the Candy Kingdom.
There you go. That's so awesome.
Yeah, and my dad has one. I did a few of the treehouse, and my dad has one that's like four of these sheets together as the treehouse, and it's on the kitchen wall. Oh, he loves it. He was like,
amazing.
Can I have this? And I was like, all right, Dad, I'll give it to you.
That's so cool.
But yeah, there's some other fun stuff in here. This is like the sketch of the treehouse before it was the treehouse, which is a fun one. And then this was in the coffee table book. None of the storyboarders knew like how the house was like physically navigated. So I was like, I'll make you a map. So we made the little post-it map and the poop bucket. I had the idea of like when you saw the outside shot, you'd see the little poop bucket come down out of the out of the bathroom. I don't know if the bathroom ever made it in. I tried to like write an episode once that was like based in the bathroom so it would get in there, but it didn't fly.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, so that's so.
Because you've talked to me a little bit about it, but they don't know about like where the inspiration for the treehouse and all that. Where did that come from for you?
The inspiration definitely came from before I went out to LA. I had gotten this. I found myself in a situation where I'd been working with my friend who had 100 acres on this mountain in New Hampshire, this forest. And I just started working with him. Him and his brother were working every day. Eb and Abe Dorr, they were working every day, fixing up these hunting cabins. And I went up there and I was like, oh my God, like this is so much fun. Can I come up every weekend and just like work with you guys, like cutting trails in the woods and like banging on these cabins? And they're like, hell yeah. So we'd go up every weekend and we'd work all day and we'd have this like a steak tip cookout at night and like drink some beers and like hang out. And it was just so much fun. And I was like, wow, like I immediately saw that as an artist, if I was able to get a little piece of property and build a little cabin for myself,
that, you know, I could basically have 100% creative freedom. You know, it would really take the overhead out of the picture.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. And I just was so enchanted with that idea. And I'm a real, like, I like to just throw myself in ridiculous projects that I like to have no idea what I'm doing. But it's just like, I had really strong intuition. So he said, hey, build a cabin up here while you're waiting to get your own land. And I don't know how even serious he was, but I was like, okay, let's do it. And like, I came back with a chainsaw the next weekend. I'm like, let's build this, man. And he's like, okay, let's go find a spot. And we went out in the middle of the woods. And he's like, all right, we'll clear it out. And I'm cutting down trees. And and I ended up living up there for like about 3 years altogether, from like tent in, from starting in a tent in the wintertime with my dog.
Oh my God.
I was so psyched that it was like the middle of winter and I was in a tent. And I would have two winter sleeping bags, and my dog Keenan would get down. He would go in the sleeping bags at night and sleep at my feet, and like we would just huddle in there and just work till it was too cold to work, and then get in there. And so we started out in the tent, and then eventually got in the cabin, and spent, you know, 3 years during that process. And just doing a lot of illustration at that time, working for the New Yorker, working for the New York Times, doing a lot of editorial stuff, doing all kinds of different work.
Yeah.
Did some skis, did some different fun projects that were coming in, and also projects I was, you know, always contacting, like bands I wanted to work with, doing album cover stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And hustling
then,
with all
yeah, totally yeah. hustling. I was definitely hustling right out the gate. I was determined to start my career off the day I left school, and I was definitely doing that. You know,
being like out in the wilderness change your work?
Definitely. It changed my work because it was a very focused effort to like deconstruct kind of my mind and really create a strong vision of what I wanted to do. You know, at this point I was like, this was like maybe 20, 21 to 24 or something like that.
Yeah.
And I knew I had a lot of ideas in my head that were like kind of planted there through school or through kind of other people's expectations that I did that I knew didn't have to do with my goals. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to kind of go, you know, that like that epic, you know, thing where you go off into the wilderness alone and you kind of like tear yourself down and build yourself back up. And it actually really worked. You know, I got really into deep focus with my work up there. I would spend days without seeing other people. I would obviously go ride into town and hang out. I was riding my bike in, and I would hang with my parents were like 20 miles away. I would ride over there and hang out with them on weekends and stuff. And my mom would pick me up. She like her church, actually, she's a minister. Her church was like past the land, so she would pick me up on the weekends and I would go hang out with them. And so
what did they think about you being out in the wilderness?
They definitely were like, well, we'll see what happens. Like, I was always doing like insane stuff from the get off, so like I think like everything I've done in my life, my parents are like, okay, well, we'll see what happens. Yeah. Some of it has been a total flame out, and some of it's been like, you know, but that's just kind of how I've like sharpened my blade on like ridiculous things that I see in my head and just chased after. I've kind of had no other option because I don't have any other skills really. Like, I only have like,
I'm like this too.
I'm just driven to do something, and I do that. And then from the information I get from either miserably failing or any from small success to big success, you know, it's all the same to me. If you fail or if you succeed, it's like information. It's like information of where to go next.
Yeah,
you know
then
what I'm
you
saying?
Can iterate. So, and Jim Carrey has a great quote that I love, and he says that because his dad wanted to be like a comedian or something, but he ended up doing the safe path of being an accountant, failing, and then having to be a janitor.
Mm-hmm.
And so his quote is, you can fail at what you don't want, so you might as well try what you do want.
Exactly. So I had been living in this cabin and really figured out that I definitely wanted to homestead. It was like a test for me. I grew up in a real rural, you know, rural setting, and just I had a really idyllic New England childhood where you're running around in the woods all the time with a pack of kids and building forts and having fun and drawing and watching cartoons. So,
and this is Vermont?
No, this is Western Massachusetts. Oh, okay. This is like outside of Amherst, where UMass is. So I grew up out there in the sticks, and I started to realize, wow, like this is really, I really want to buy land. I want to homestead. I want to raise my family like in the woods. And I didn't grow up like building or hunting or fishing, but building my own cabin really gave me just this sense of like, wow, like I have this this ability to create my own reality. Mm. Like not only in my artwork can I think up the most imaginative things I can do and do them, but you know, I can do that
in the world.
And that started, and then I thought, wow, like I was always really wanted to make like really unique and personal work. That was what I was gravitating towards and really starting to dig into it at that time. And I thought, wow, if I'm creating my own life as I'm creating this work, it's going to make my work so much more powerful. I'm going to be coming from a different place than other people. You know, I've always kind of pushed away.
That's a great idea.
I've always naturally like pushed away from the pack. Like I've always wanted to differentiate myself, like even as just a teenager and stuff. So to the idea of doing that with my work, like, wow, no one that I know is doing this. So if I do this, my work is going to be coming from such
a creative, imaginative place.
Gosh, so I was hitting on all these cylinders right out the gate. And I was lucky enough to be getting, you know, a regular work from the New York Times at this point. I was doing like a job a month, which was like $500, which was definitely more than I needed to kind of fund this little endeavor. Because I think I was paying my cousin Eb like $50 a month to live up there or something like that. So it was, you know, and I would help him too. It was very much like helping him, and he was helping me, and we were just, you know, really having a good time.
But can I just pause real quick? Because I don't want people to miss that idea that I talk a lot about. Like, if you want unique work, you've got two things that are unique, and they're your DNA and they're your experience.
Yeah.
And your DNA you can't change, but your experience, like, I've never heard anybody approach it that way. Like, I can only give what I've got, and I can actually change what I've got by changing my experience.
Absolutely. So amazing. I was there to not only unpack a bunch of baggage that had been lumped on me all through school and stuff. I was miserable at school. I hated it. I would push back all the time, constantly being thrown out. Wouldn't have made it through without like the whole resource room set up for kids with ADHD and all that. That's like where they don't make you take tests in class because you know like how you were talking about the timed things psych your mind out. I was just like that, but I wouldn't even try. I'd be like, F you, like that, and then I'd be thrown out, and that was it. I would just start getting rowdy when I couldn't do anything. I'd just start to rile up the other kids, man. Like basically what I do here, but in a positive way, right? But back then I had no vision of my future, so I would just rile up things in an anarchistic way. Now I do it in a super proactive and positive.
Deconstructing
way.
Versus constructing.
Right, but then it was just like I just got pleasure in driving my teachers mad and stuff like that. But So I was there to really deconstruct these negative things that were kind of like that I was battling, and I was just gonna make myself into the character I wanted to be. I thought my life is a story and I'm going to choose which character I'm going to be, you know, and I was really starting to just that thing of taking it into your own hands, literally, and you're building your house you're going to live in, you know, and also like my family like came in on the Mayflower and has like been in New England ever since. So like there was like, I definitely feel like I was tapping into something like deep, like,
that's,
you know, so it was
crazy.
So I was looking at life and seeing all the signposts pointing me in this direction. And it was just really working. So I'm there, I'm in pure bliss, I'm so happy, I'm getting work, but I'm not getting enough work to like save up like thousands of dollars to put down on property. You know, I'm kind of like, I'm living and I'm having a fun time and I'm doing good and my career's going off, but you know, I'm thinking, I'm there in the cabin, I'm thinking, what's the next step? How do I save up a chunk of money to put a down payment on my land and start to do this, start to implement this in my life for real? And you know, there was some different things. There's more complications to the story, but basically I got this opportunity from Cartoon Network to come. And so I'm living in this cabin, you know, that I built, this fort that I built with my dog. You know, it's me and my dog living in this fort that I built. And then, you know, these steps happen, and then I'm sitting in with Penn, who I had become friends with. Penn and Pat, I had done a little work on Flapjack, which was kind of preceded Adventure Time, and Penn had bored on Adventure Time.
Penn Ward and
Pat McHale.
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting in the office with them, and they say, you know, we're trying to get Adventure Time to work. You know, we're having some trouble getting the world working. We think that we want Adventure Time to take place in a Go Shrimp world. And I was just like, boom!
Oh,
so I literally had taken, you know, I had just been living that world, and then they want me to do it.
Living in this fort with your dog, and it was that thing
where like you're following this wacky vision that even my parents were like, you're gonna go live in the woods, huh? Like everybody thought it was just so weird and nuts.
Oh,
like,
I love
like
it.
I,
so
like
good.
I like I went to school in Brooklyn. I'm you know, I have my career going, and then all of a sudden I'm just going into the woods to like, you know, do this like deconstructionist thing. People think like, oh boy, he's losing it. But it's so funny because I followed my intuition. It was so hard because I didn't know how to build. I had days where I would cry out there and be like, what the fuck? Pouring rain. I'm trying to put this house together. You know, my dog's like running around, like killing chickens down the road. Like I just like so in over my head, oh, but like, I just knew, I intuitively knew that this was, I was killing the weakness in me. I was following my dream. This was going to lead me to where I needed to go. Camping in the snow. This was going to lead to it.
You know, can I just stop you there real quick? What do you think? Like, we don't have to get specific, but I mean, stories like this are just so amazing. And I think there's so much you can learn from this as a person. And just what is it that is that set you up to do that? Like, what is the thing that's calling you to do this thing and setting you up for this perfect kismet like moment?
I mean, I think it's a lot of things. I think it's growing up in the woods. And then I think it's having such a hard time struggling to fit into the world that's been created out there. Yeah. And then just realizing, I realized when I started to struggle as a teenager, you know, 13 through 17 were just miserable years for me. I mean, I still had fun. I still had friends. I still did a lot of stuff, but like, inside, I just had no vision of where I wanted to go. So I was constantly looking at the world and seeing that, you know, most people were not living, were not like their job wasn't the most passionate thing that they love to do. You know, I was just thinking like, man, this just seems like you're kind of following in the footsteps of a lot of people who had like, just not the greatest ideas, you know, and this, that the human reality is just a set of choices that people made. And I want to make my own choices. Mm-hmm. I don't want to just accept the default template that's being handed to me because I didn't fit into it. So it came through the struggle and also came through, like I know I touched on, it's another huge story, but you know, at the end of that, you know, how I came out of that real struggling and not having any purpose was that incident where I was at the beach and I, you know, basically was jumping off these cliffs, but I fell off this 40-foot cliff, shattered every bone in both my feet immediately, broke my ankle, three places, my wrist, and literally just hit rock bottom, right? Ooh, and I come out, my bone's sticking out of my foot, and you know, I go get to the hospital, and you know, my feet are such a mess, they can't even do surgery for 2 weeks. They go, your feet are like jello, they need to take some kind of shape before we can even work on them again. And then, you know, I'm going through the process, I have the surgeries, and they say, you know, well, we don't know if you're ever gonna walk again. And to me, that was the moment that it clicked. And I said, okay, I'm done having things happen to me. I am now going to make things happen for myself. Mm-hmm. And that was the birth of that mentality that was so hungry to just tear out the bullshit, tear out the wiring that had been put in me that was sabotaging me, that was, you know, that was undermining, you know, that my you know, I knew I had to build up my self-esteem. I needed to build up the powers in me. I knew I had the powers in me. I knew that ADHD was my superpower, needed to stop I needed to stop listening to people telling me that it's a disability,
super weakness,
and I needed it to become my super strength.
True.
Because to me, ADHD means that you have zero attention span for things that are boring, and you have basically unlimited attention span with training for the things that you love to do.
Absolutely.
You know, so it was me saying I have more focus than most people around me. I'm going to keep honing that. I'm going to work that, and I'm going to use that to differentiate myself. I am going to create my own reality. I am going to live the life that I want to live, that I see that people aren't doing, you know, because they don't have I had more fire. I could see right away. I have more fire than all these people. So I need to use this fire to create, not to destroy. So that's, I think, when I'm in that cabin and I'm working on it and it's so hard, that's what's keeping me not give up. I'm saying, no, I'm not going to say that this is too hard and go back and get a job and do this. I'm going to keep creating my dream, my fantasy reality, because I can just start to, because as soon as I saw it, when I stepped on the property at my cousin's 100 acres there, we call it Mystery Mountain. You know, as soon as I stepped on Mystery Mountain and saw that, it was like, okay, and nothing was going to let me, I knew that nothing was going to hold me back. So no amount of failure on that mountain, that I knew all the failure that happened on that mountain was going to get me closer to where I wanted to go. That was the weak parts of me that were dying.
So, you know, I think that there might be totally scientific explanations for it, but I don't think we have like words for it. So I'm comfortable talking about it in kind of esoteric, weird terms. Yeah. But I think one thing that I've noticed is all throughout my life, the things that I find to be my purpose were things that there were outside forces telling me were my problem.
Yeah.
And it just happened my whole life that happened. And it makes you self-conscious about the things that are actually fantastic and unique and different about you. The things that stick out, they're the things that are like, why are you like that? And you're like, oh, I shouldn't be like that.
Yeah.
And that's actually your thing.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, totally.
Absolutely.
And then did you have like a, like an internal nudge, like when something felt right, or like, was it, you know, did you feel like, yeah, were you just following like you said intuition.
Yeah, well, just like how you say, like, you know, just like creativity is like breastfeeding. The more you pump, the more it flows. It's like intuition is like that too. I tell people, intuition is your internal compass. If you're not actively testing your intuition, you know, fearlessly, like I might totally fail at this, but I'm feeling pulled in this direction. Mm. Whether it's your relationships, whether it's trying a job, a vocation, a hobby, your friendships with people. Sometimes you just meet someone and it clicks. You're like, oh my God. It's just you're just, you know, that's when you're engaging in the life that is ahead of you, you know. So I think just flexing that and just working on that intuitive muscle all the time and chasing it down and looking at those signposts of life, really, you know, I don't know if it's,
do you think there's science or do you think it's something else?
I have no idea. I mean, I think that sometimes trying to, like, I love science, I love religion, I love all the, to me it's all information that you can pull from. I don't need to pick or choose one or the other. Mm-hmm. I don't need to try to define it. If defining it helps, then that's good. But sometimes defining it can kind of limit it, because you go, wait, true, what am I feeling? Is this, what category is this? And I think, like, you know, I like to think, like I say in the mornings here, like, I am a creative animal in an infinite universe just on this, like, lush living planet. Mm. If I start from there, then I know that, you know, I'm very clear, I'm very open, and I'm allowing myself to be pulled in the directions. I'm feeling that magnetic pull of the intuitive compass. Which way is it going? And just being totally okay with failure being just as useful as success. I think if you can truly wrap your mind around that, then you're going to be happy in your life, because you're going to figure it out. I think a lot of people hold back because they're just afraid of failing. That, I think, holds most people back right off the bat.
I think there's two things there. One, I think one of the things I talk to people about, science, religion, ideas, whatever, getting so hung up on, is this the exact articulation of the truth? I don't know how helpful that is, but I do think that, what's the idea that serves you to serve other people? Mm-hmm. So, like, what are the ideas that get you motivated, pump you up? Maybe they're just like a parable that perfectly sums up this thing that pushes you in the right direction. Go with that, and I think that that's fine. There was another way I wanted to take it, but I don't remember what it is.
Well, yeah, I think just the practice of it is so important, because you want to build up the experience. It's just like the repetitions of a fighter, the repetitions of a basketball player, because another part of this is like, so, you know, it was what allowed me to push when I was in that cabin was the breaking my feet and all the struggle I had gone through. Another thing, you know, we had just talked earlier about that one weekend where it came down where I was going to get that job on Adventure Time or not, to even raise the stakes of that weekend. Okay, so I had gone out there to, you know, I had freelanced for Flapjack a little bit in my cabin, and they had talked me into coming out. I wasn't super thrilled with moving to LA, but I thought, okay, if I move, because I was in paradise, right? I'm in this cabin, but I want to get to the next step. I want to do this on my own property, you know? So I'm thinking,
this is the journey away from home.
Exactly, exactly. So it's like, okay, if I go out to LA, for a few years, this is going to give me the cash that I need to get my own land and start this,
the, you know, elixir for my, to for bring
my,
back
yeah, for yeah. myself and my family. And so I go out there and I've done three storyboards freelance for them, and then I do one storyboard in-house, and then during the process of pitching the second storyboard, it comes to a head that, you know, the people that I've been working with on Flapjack, for whatever reason, are having personality conflicts with me, and it comes down to that I'm fired. Okay, so I move out to LA to chase this dream, and within 6 weeks I'm fired. And it's the most devastating day of my life. And I go, oh my fucking God, what am I going to do? You know, I just signed a $15,000 lease that my dad co-signed on. Just absolutely devastated, okay? And then the next day is the day that Penn and Pat come in and they go, look, we want you to design the world for Adventure Time.
Oh my gosh.
So, you know, it's like,
were you crying?
I was crying. I was so, Pete Browngart. Oh, it's so Pete good. Browngart, who did Secret Mountain Fort Awesome, and he's doing Uncle Grandpa right now. He's the creator and he's the voice of Uncle Grandpa. He's my really good friend. He's my cousin. And I call him up and I'm like, like, man, they just fired me. Fuck them. Like, what the fuck? Like, I just got out here. I can't believe this. You know, but the more you hear about it, like we heard Ken Osborne, mm-hmm. the head writer of Adventure Time, he got fired from all these jobs. It's like, it's very common, you know, but for me, it was coming from out here, not even wanting to go to Hollywood necessarily, getting out there, feeling like I'm the shit, and then immediately getting canned, like, oh, this isn't working out, man. We're going to have to fire you. And I'm just like, wait, what? You know, just totally devastated. So then the next day I get the chance to design the world for Adventure Time. Hey man, we really want you to do it. But the studio wants you to test. So then I'm testing, but I'm taking too long. And then it comes down again. It's a test. Oh. You know, when you're chasing that dream, it's the test. And it all comes down. So when it came to that weekend of, hey, you either need to figure out how to draw 10 times faster than you've ever drawn in your life, or you're going home again. Like, I got saved. I got pulled up on that raft. But then they go, oh, but that raft's also sinking. So unless you can build yourself a new raft, which you've never done right now, you're also still going to die. You know, so I'm there and I'm just, but I'm sitting there at the desk and I'm, you know, I've been through being in the woods, in the snow, building my cabin, not knowing what the hell I'm doing. I've been through the doctor telling me that I'm never going to walk again, and knowing that if I just clear my mind and I sit down and I summon everything I have and I push, that I will figure it out. And it's those things. It's like, you can't hope that when the big opportunity comes, or, you know, an opportunity presents itself, no matter how big or small, but one you've been waiting for, one you've been wanting, you can't hope that, you know, you're lucky enough to be prepared. You need to be 1,000% prepared for that moment. It's all the things that have come before then that get you that opportunity, you know, that allow you to make the most of that opportunity. You know, if I hadn't followed my intuition and pushed myself through that struggle, number one, I probably wouldn't have never been set up to get there, because it was a very, you know, 1, 2, 3 mm-hmm. thing to get there. But I would have crumbled under that pressure. I don't particularly like pressure. I don't like to be behind. I don't like to come up unprepared. I'm always trying to be over prepared. You know, when I was in college, I would get up at 6 a.m. every day, even through the summers, and work just to be
totally honed in. Other people, exactly. Just to feel like, I'm
100% honed in, you know. So to you know, to be so outside of your comfort zone, and now the stakes so high, and to have to just, if I can't figure this out today, I'm literally packing up, I'm going home, I'm probably gonna be $15,000 in the hole, plus I borrowed $3,000 from my grandpa to like make the trip out here, you know, just so, but you just have to find a way that drawing on that past experience, drawing on all that, it's that idea of
showing up,
working your intuition, working your work ethic. I mean, intuition and work ethic are the two things that are going to get you where you want to go.
Totally.
You know, there's going to be, I'm not a huge believer that, like, you know, you're going to miss your big shot. I think there's always going to be more opportunities, but like, you could keep missing every opportunity too. You know, I missed opportunities right out of school. I almost had a bunch of children's book deals. I was working with a publisher, Simon & Schuster, every week, and I really thought I was going to get a children's book, but it just fell through. Mm. You know, so there's a lot of steps along the way of a successful career that just don't pan out. But the thing is to just keep coming back to it, no matter what. And even no matter how devastated you are, you get up at 6 a.m. the next day, whether you have a job or not, and you draw. And you, if you want to be a professional illustrator, start being a professional illustrator in your life. And then, right, exactly. Yeah. You have to make, no one's going to say, welcome to the job, now you're a professional. No. You have to become a professional.
Before they give you a job as a professional.
You have to develop your professional practices. You have to develop a professional routine. No one's going to call you up and you're sleeping until 1 and they say, okay, you got the job, come on in tomorrow. You know, it's just not how it works. Yeah, exactly. Because you're not going to be ready, because you're going to be, your mind's not going to be ready till 1 o'clock to work. You know, it's like,
totally.
So it's that, it's that idea.
You got to prove yourself first.
Exactly. Prove your concept. You know, it's like we were talking about with Andrew. It's like, if you're not proven, don't go out and pitch a bunch of people something. Go around with an amazing finished product and put it in their hands and say, let me do this for you.
Yes.
They're executives because they don't have imagination.
Exactly.
Right? Don't make them work for it.
They can't ink the pages in your mind. Like,
if they were creative and imaginative, they would be on the creative side. Yes. So you need to show them a product that they say, yes, I'm an executive, I can sell this. In some cases, I can totally ruin this. And then, but that's how it works. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's how it works.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit. Well, real quick before I move on, I just want to say, like, I love this because as someone who has started to be, you know, I have people looking to me for advice. And so, like, I have just found that I've taken actually a lot of risks.
Yeah.
Like, a lot.
Yeah.
And I continue to.
Yeah.
But it's hard to tell people, other people to do it. Like, you right. want to tell them the smart way.
Right.
I'm like, I've done it the dumb way a bunch right. of times, risked right. it, right. did the intuition thing. But yeah. So I love hearing all that story. Yeah.
Well, that's why I always, when people come here to camp to talk, the visiting artists, I always say, what was your biggest struggle? Mm. You know, to me, that is some of the most useful information because
totally.
Then when someone is in that hole, when they've just been fired, when their dream is crumbling in front of them, they can go, oh, wait, I remember, you know, Ghost Trip was talking about this. Annie J. Miller was talking about this. You know, this is what happened to them. I can do this too. Mm. You know, you mm-hmm. need to know that that's part of the picture. A lot of times you only hear about people's successes. True. But every single person, it's cliche, but you still don't hear it. It's cliche. They've all had immense failure in their yes. life, and that's what gave them, it's getting back up. It's being successful is how many times do you get back up?
Totally.
You know what I'm saying?
Totally.
The people that gave up on their dreams, they got knocked down a few times and they said, I'm just chilling here. I'm good where I'm at, you know? Mm-hmm. And the people that succeed and continue to succeed, because it's one thing to have a couple years where you run, you get a couple opportunities and you're able to build on them. But when those opportunities stop, just like you're saying, everybody hits points in their career. It can come at any point where
yes.
the things dry up, and then you go, okay, well, what's my next move? And you mm-hmm. got to make it happen for yourself. You
got
to go back to the beginning where you didn't have anything and you made something out. You know, you proved it. You have to constantly prove it, and that's why that's why I've been on this latest run of, okay, what is my absolute best drawing?
Yeah.
You know, just, I want to dig in. I want to draw something that I never even thought I could do. You know, I want to push so far and so deep that I'm going to blow myself away. You know, sometimes you got to go on those quests.
That principle right there sounds simple,
mm-hmm.
but it's super powerful. I've went through periods where I'm like, I want to make the best possible thing I can make.
Yeah.
Like,
it's not easy.
Reach in. Yeah.
It's not easy.
But it's a really good mind game. So the other thing I want to talk about, last thing, is Ghost Camp.
Yeah.
That's where we're at. That's what we've been doing.
Yeah.
And just tell us a little bit about what it is and, you know, all that good stuff.
Yeah. So Ghost Scout Training Camp is basically my stab at two things: creating like the ultimate fantasy summer camp for adults of like all the things that I would have done as a kid if I had like chainsaws and like, you know, just like 25 acres that were my own and all this stuff. But also recreating that time for me in the woods where I kind of deconstructed, I disconnected, especially today. I mean, the internet wasn't even as all pervasive. Cell phones were just getting big, and that was like 2003, right? I mean, they didn't even have, I remember up there was, I had like the first like Palm Pilot that could go on the internet, because that's how I would connect from there.
Oh,
and it was like, you'd plug your computer into it and it would constantly be dropping the signal, and you'd pull up the internet on the phone and it would just be like a jumble of squares because no sites were made for the internet.
Yeah.
You know, so wait, what was that? Where I lost.
You're talking about how so
much of it is just unplugging, deconstruct, like unplugging, having the space to just clear your mind. I think there's something very magical about getting out into the forest and spending time bonding with people. This is like, this is a very unique experience. So basically the structure of it is that people apply every year and we accept 8 or 9. The last 2 years we've done 9. We started with 6 and then we did 2 years of 8 and then we've done 2 years of 9 cadets. And so they apply from all over the world. We look at I look at the applications, kind of try to see who's kind of most excited to come and who seems like it would be a good fit for the group morale and stuff like that. You know, not as important how advanced your work is, because that's not kind of the point.
Yeah.
The whole point of Ghost Scout Training Camp is to really get in here and figure out what kind of character you want to be, who you want to be in your life, and what you want your life to be. You know, part of the application process is starting to fill in a 5-year plan. And again, it's not so much what's on the paper of that 5-year plan. It's training your mind to start thinking in terms of the grander vision, because when you really start to work a five-year plan and let that seep into your brain tissue, then just when you're out making little decisions every day, you're subconsciously aiming it towards all the things that you're doing. So you're looking for the signs out in the world, but also just on a subconscious level, you're already focused in that direction.
And it's making the decisions for you. Yes. Just like you said about the routine this morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you know, you don't wake up and say, "Do I feel like working out?"
Right.
You just work out.
Right. Like I love the Joe Rogan podcast, and he wakes up and works hard every morning. He goes, "Most mornings I don't want to work out, but I work out every day because I want to be someone that works out."
And this that is vision part of works that same way.
Exactly.
Like, I'm not making a decision today. I already know where I'm going.
Right. Exactly. So, and to keep working it, your plan changes. A 5-year plan is actually a 10-year plan, and you're lucky if you get 2.5 years worth of stuff accomplished there. But that's
true.
But that will be enough to keep you locked into your dream. You know, jump into your dream as soon as possible and work it out. Don't say someday I'm going to get to my dream. No. Because when you get there, when you get the opportunity to do it, when you're set up for it, you're not going to be ready. You're not going to be toned. You're not going to have that edge. You got to be in the dream working it.
Yep.
So when they get here, basically it's a 30-day camp. It's actually a little bit more, 31 days, right? However many days are in the month of August. They come here, they arrive on August 1st, and they stay till September 1st. Mm-hmm. This is how we've done it the last 5 years. And basically, it's 6 a.m. We wake up every day and we throw on the jock jams. Dun, 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 dun. So, you know, we throw on the jock jams. So pop it up, pop it out. Everybody jumps out of their tent. Within about 5-10 minutes of waking up, we're sitting here. We're starting with stretches. We've been starting with yoga stretches this year, maybe about 10 minutes of yoga stretching to get loose. And then we do 2 sets of 50 jumping jacks. We do maximum push-ups and sit-ups. And then one day we run up the hill. Where it's maybe about like, I don't know, a quarter of a mile up and down. And we got this year we put in a basketball hoop at the top. So you're doing a layup at the top of the run, which is incredible. and then we ended off with 5 minutes of just mindful meditation and just kind of being very happy and putting that kind of Buddha smile on your face and letting it permeate and being grateful and just connecting again, that idea of you're a creative animal just on this living planet, this unique planet that, you know, it's amazing that it exists and that we're in this infinite. So it's always like a very practical thing that we talk about like business stuff and like different creating a unique product and differentiating yourself in the marketplace. But also, hell, you're a magical, creative animal on this like unbelievable planet that should not exist. And it's like hurtling through space. You know, we're flying around this giant nuclear fire in space. And like, if you can bounce between all those points of view, I think it starts to kind of like rip your mind open and you go, oh my God. You know, if you can contain like these different ideas in your mind at the same time. So camp, it's a lot about kind of like combining these ideas of the practical world, but also the magical world, because that's your dream exists between there, right? A lot of people think of idealism as like this completely removed idea, like an idealistic thing needs to be so pure, but like, no. Idealism is where you start. And then when the rubber hits the road, when you try to bring that usually half-formed, undeveloped, like probably a bad idea to start with. It's like, you know, based on not a lot of knowledge, but more like just desire to do this thing. Mm. When you try to birth that into reality, immediately there's going to be all these complications.
Totally.
It's going to be really hard. It's going to be painful. And you need to get through that first hump of it before you start to see, okay, I can see it changes. And then you can see, okay, now I see how I can do this, right? The way you see it in the beginning, it's almost never going to translate into reality that way. You're going to need to fail at the first attempt of it and then regroup and say, okay, what parts of my dream can make it into reality? And then how can I start with that? And then
how do I iterate and
work
and
back towards where
and,
I want it to go? Yep. You know what I'm saying?
Gary Vaynerchuk talks about it like having your head in the clouds and then your hands in the dirt.
Right.
And I love that idea.
Exactly.
I think
that's exactly
when you're in the
we
clouds, you're thinking,
that's literally
you see
what
this
we do.
Vision, you think it's so perfect. It's all going to just happen. It's going to lead the way. And all I got to do is keep my head in the clouds.
Yeah.
But as soon as you go put your hand to the till, it's like, wait a second, it's not going to happen that easily.
Exactly.
It's going to be messy.
Exactly.
It's going to go failures.
Exactly.
But you have to do both.
Right.
You can't be all spiritual being all up at the top and never do the business, never do the stuff.
You got to do both.
But you got to go back
and
forth.
You got to do both. Right. A lot of times I think that artists in particular think that it's a magical process, and when you're inspired, you sit down and you know, you make this piece, and someone's of course they should realize mm-hmm. how great this is. And that's called a hobby. That's yeah, great. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. That's great. Where we all start. That's yep. where I started. That's where everybody starts. That's called a hobby.
Yep.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Now, if you want to take that into the professional realm, you need to start thinking of it as a business. And yes. you get up every day and work on it, whether you're feeling it or not, whether you have a job or not. That's you need to make it into your own business, right? So, yeah. So we start with the workout at 6 a.m. Then we break at 6:30 and eat a breakfast. They bust out whatever they want. Nice little breakfast, half an hour. And then at 7 a.m., we get busy with the forest work. We've got a couple small cabins that we built here out of logs that we've cut down. We've got some cool log platforms that we're working on, drawing shelters up in the woods. We've got a couple wooden teepees built all on the website. People can check it out. So we do that till noon, and then we break for lunch, and people eat a little lunch, take a little nap if they want to, and then at 1 o'clock we get busy on the drawing projects, and they draw up until 6 at dinner time, and then they'll break for dinner at 6 and hopefully keep on working until 10 o'clock bedtime in the evening. There's obviously socializing, hanging out by the campfire, tons of bonding, everybody's sitting around drawing together, everybody's talking while they're working together. It's very much a real intense bonding experience yeah. between all these people. None of them know each other. Once in a while someone's friend will apply and get accepted and stuff, but for the vast majority, these people come from different places in America, different cultures in America. They come from different cultures outside of America. We've had Australia, the UK, Mexico. We've got Sarajevo this year, Bosnia Herzegovina. So coming from all over the world and just coming together and by the time the month's over, just such a bond between the group. Mm-hmm. Everybody's having so much fun. So yeah, Monday through Friday, that's the schedule. And then every Wednesday we do like a communal dinner where they break up into teams, and two of the kids will go out and they'll get the ingredients and cook up a group dinner for everybody. And then we have the outdoor movie night in the outdoor movie theater. And then on Saturdays we have the Shack Barbecue, where we listen to the Shack Diesel CD, and we have a little cookout down in the VIP yeah. zone. And then we watch the outdoor movie. So we do two outdoor movies a week.
It's
a 12 by 15 screen that's hung up in the forest in between the trees, and we're projecting over a brook onto this screen. We watch a lot of Arnold Schwarzenegger. It was so far we've watched Commando, Akira, Top Gun, Predator, Tekken Concrete. We just watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's always a secret what the movie's gonna be until we pop it off, so people are wondering. We may guess what movie we're watching, and it's just really fun. I mean, really just trying to create all the elements to me that made my childhood so much fun. It's watching Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, and you're building forts in the woods, and you're drawing comics and cartoons, and it's just an adult fantasy version of that.
Yeah.
So that's the Monday through Friday routine. And then every Saturday, depending on weather, we switch Saturday and Sunday around. They're kind of malleable, but one of those days, usually Saturday, is going to be an all-day drawing day where we get up, work out, eat breakfast, and then we get to drawing on the projects all day. And then Sunday is we get up, work out, and we go out to one of the state parks in Vermont, sometimes mm-hmm. New Hampshire, and we usually start with a nice lake, and we'll do a swimming day at the beach, and people are bringing their work and hanging out mm-hmm. and cooking out and drawing. And then we start with a 4 mile hike. This week we went to Crystal Lake in Barton, New Hampshire, Barton, Vermont first, which is a beautiful state park. Then we went over to Lake Elmore the second weekend, and that's a really nice lake with a little fire tower hike above the lake. So you hike up 2 miles, you get to climb this fire tower, get an amazing view of the landscape, come back down, and 4 miles altogether. So people are starting to build it up a little bit, and they've been working out every day, so people are feeling mm-hmm. pretty good. And then this past weekend when you arrived, we jumped right into the 7.5 yeah. mile hike, a Camel's Hump, which is probably the most challenging hike of the month. It's got a lot of just steep rock scramble scrambling and climbing up rock stairs and stuff. So that's that one starts to get a little challenging for people. It's really fun. They're digging deep. They're like, why the F are we climbing this mountain? I'm just here to draw. You know, but it's about just pushing people outside of their comfort zones. It's about in a safe and very, very safe and organized. And I mean, there's kids climbing up these mountains too. It's not like we're not climbing with ropes. I mean, we're not throwing anybody in to something where they're going to fail at. We want to set people up to succeed, not to fail. It's not the kind of camp where we're trying to push people.
We're not
breaking people. I never want to break anybody. People definitely hit certain breaking points.
Yes.
But it's usually kind of based on their own kind of limitations. It's usually more like usually little emotional things that they're going through at the time. And, you know, the social aspect or the pressure of producing. I think just the pressure of like showing work every day and stuff to this group of strangers is some of the most challenging stuff for people.
But you're connecting. You keep connecting. Pushing yourself mentally, physically, connecting that to being a great artist.
Yeah, we're talking about you have one brain, and your brain is working the same every time, whether you're working out in the morning, whether you're climbing a mountain, whether you're socializing with your friends, or whether you're at your desk working. So, you know, if you're training your mind, if you're making friends with your mind, you know, everybody has voices in their head. And, you know, if you're not building up your self-esteem, there's going to be a lot of voices in your head that are undermining you, that are saying you're not good enough, you don't belong in this certain situation, you know, these people are doing so much better than you. You know, you really want to tone down the voices that are undermining you. You know, I say you wouldn't hang around with 10 people. You wouldn't be in the middle of a crowd of people that were all berating you and telling you that you weren't good enough. You would leave that situation.
Yes,
So don't allow voices in your head that are cutting you down. You know, of course, there's voices in your head that are going to, you know, tell you, hey, you're in a dangerous situation. Hey, this person isn't good for you. You know, those things are good. But you don't want like bad self-esteem to be cutting you down and stuff like that. And you don't want to be hearing like your parents' expectations of you that don't have to do with your dreams in your head and your teachers and all this stuff, you know. So you really want to tone down the negative voices in your head. You want to really focus on, again, just pumping up and exercising and hanging out with the cool voices in your head that are like, you can do it. This is you. You can push yourself further. So we talk about you have one brain in your head and you're using it. You know, it's going to apply to everything that you do. So you need to be really good friends with the voices in your head. Your brain needs to be there for you when you need it. You know, you need to develop a great relationship. So when it comes time to say, okay, can I do this or not? Your brain will go, yes, you can do this. This is important to you. You can do this. You know, it's so important. So yeah, with the workouts, with the hikes, it all ties in. I mean, it's what I did in the woods that allowed me to then have the strength and the vision and the unique perspective that I had, you know, going into the next phase of my career there, you know, and doing what I did, you know. And yeah, so I think that's such a huge part of camp is challenging people. And everyone I know, to a person, everyone leaves here saying, wow, I did so much more than I thought I was capable of doing as a human being. Just, you know, some people,
so much power.
Right, some people will come, you know, like you know, there was a reporter here earlier and he's asking people, you know, do you think coming here will be good for your career? And, you know, I think if you only think of it in terms of your career coming here, you know, that's, you're missing part of the picture. This is about you as a person, because your career is not going to mean anything without you as a, first, you're a human being.
Yep.
You are you. So you need to think about what's going to make you happy. It's just like what you said, you don't want to focus on the outcome. You want to focus on the process.
Yep.
You don't want to focus on the rewards of your career. You want to focus on sitting at your desk, having fun doing it. That's what's going to keep you there. No reward is going to keep you going through it again. Once you've had a few awards, you're going to go, okay, I think I did what I came here to do.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? But if the joy is in the process of it, then you're always going to be fully engaged. You're always going to be digging in deeper. You can always push harder. You can always work in a different way. Mm. You know, you'll always have a direction to go if that's your attitude of where do I go next? You know what I'm saying? And just stay hungry. I think it's so important to me. I think it's so important to set up a life for yourself where you are challenged and you're staying hungry. You know, right now I'm sitting in 25 acres that I bought for myself. That is my dream life, to just develop this into like an amazing art park to share with everybody, full of little nooks and crannies of discovery that you can go draw in and hang out in and spend time in and do all this fun stuff in. You know, I'm choosing to build my own house, which is an insane project that I really am just starting to figure out how to do after 5 years of doing it, you know. So I've set up a life where I get up every day and I'm looking at like insulation in the wall. I need to do, like, I really think there's so much to setting up a life that is challenging for yourself. Yeah. I think it's so underrated. Yeah. I think so many people gravitate towards comfort immediately. And you want to have comfort. You don't want to be sleeping on a bed of nails. I mean, some people like that, but I'm not, I don't want to be, I'm not trying to torture myself.
No.
I'm an extremely happy person. I'm extremely fulfilled because every day I get up and I'm fully engaged with my life. I'm meeting my challenges head on. You know, I'm fully engaged in them. What's next? What's the next project?
There's something to throwing yourself in the deep end.
Exactly. It's that idea of jumping right into your dream and just living in it. That's going to make you so fulfilled. You know, in the moment, it's nicer to just sit there for a day and do nothing. But the next day, at the end of the day, you're like, oh, man, you don't feel fulfilled. You know, it's nice in the moment, but you always want to find that balance of feeling good in the moment, but also having that moment set you up to feel good in the next moment as well. And on and on and on. Like I always say during camp, one of my favorite things is that my body is constantly sore. It's such a fulfilling feeling that your body is just constantly, there's some part of your body that's so sore because you've been working so hard, but you know that that soreness is strength, you know, it's so, such a good feeling, you know? And
even if you're a pleasure junkie, we talked about this, which I am, like a pleasure junkie. I love pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely.
You find that it's a sweeter pleasure when you've had to work for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And also, you know, it's just like that thing where, you know, the and this is shifting gears a little bit, but the bacteria in your gut is going to dictate what kind of food you crave. So if you eat a lot of junk food, your body is going to tell you that junk food is really good. Keep eating that. That's really yummy. That's really yummy. And but if you switch to eating a much healthier diet, like I've this last year and a half, I've been really focusing on optimizing my diet and being super new, super, super, super good food that's really gonna make my mind sharp, that's gonna make my body feeling good. You know, I'm 36 years old now. I want to go into my 40s being in my best health possible for my kids and just for my career. You know, just like we were talking about with athletes, everything that they do is streamlined and trained to, so when they step on that court, the most elite athletes in the world, they step on that field to play, they're dialed in, they're ready to go, they're nothing, they've done every possible thing to prepare for what they're going to do. And when I sit down to draw, I want to be in my absolute best productive zone so I can just destroy it.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? So again, I forgot where we jumped off from this.
I don't know.
The gut biome. So yeah, so when you start to eat healthier, then you start to crave healthy food. It's literally, it's not I like sweets. It's there are alien life forms living in your stomach that came from shitty food that are craving more of their friends to come have a shitty party in your stomach and destroy your body and make your mind out of focus.
And life just works this way.
And make you want to be lazy. Right, and this is just the biology of life, okay? Yes. This is definitely science, you know?
Yeah, man.
I heard this on a radio lab, as we could say with any scientific. Yeah, yeah. But no, I think there actually was a word about this. But yeah, so when you shift over, that your palate is shaped by what's in your gut. And, and your motivations are actually very shaped by what's in your gut. Because if you're putting shitty fuel in your body, you are going to have a low motor. You're going to be not as motivated as you should be. Mm-hmm. So it starts with those things of... And when you exercise, it's not just like, I'm getting strong, I'm going to look good today, and I'm going to feel better. No, no, you're actually releasing all these chemicals that are making your body more healthy. Mm. You're working your joints. You're setting yourself up to feel good. You're setting yourself up to get up and feel like you're energized.
Your
you're
mind
fresh,
and
you're
your
dialed
body
in.
Are connected in
exactly,
this way.
Exactly. I think a lot of people in general... And, you know, I think, you know, just aren't that holistic in their thinking about their vision of their life.
Yeah.
And I think especially artists, again, they don't think about being healthy, being having high self-esteem, being physically fit and just getting those chemicals pumping through your body that are going to pump you up.
Connected.
You know, and yeah, I think the opposite. Almost a lot of artists are maybe more introverted, maybe more, you know, have some anxieties and stuff like that. But that isn't you. That's just where you're at.
True.
You can choose where you want to go with that, but you do have to do the hard work of getting up. It's like, it's that thing of saying, okay, do I feel like working out today? No, of course you don't. You got to get up and do it. You know what I'm saying? So it's the thing of like who you want to be. It all comes back to me. It's all the same thing. It all comes back to who you want to be, what you want to do in your life. If you want to do your best artwork, it starts with the attitude that you wake up with in the morning. It starts with what you're putting in your body. It starts with the voices in your head. It starts with the voices in your life, the people around you. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
If your parents are cutting you down, you need to find a way to tune that out.
Yep.
If your friends are doing nothing with their life, you shouldn't be spending every day with them. You know what I'm saying?
Surround yourself with people like the people you want
to
be.
Exactly. You need to really create a life for yourself that is going to get you to where you want to go. You know, you can't live in these dire circumstances and then think that, you know, you're going to accomplish something that's going to pull you out of there. No, you have to build it up one step at a time. Like Stephen King has a book about writing called On Writing. And he talks about preparing a beautiful nest for your muse to come and arrive in. And I love that metaphor. Awesome. I love that visual. You know, you're not just sitting down and like waiting and tapping your, you know, my muse is late. You need to do everything you possibly can so that when you're there, you sit down, your muse is right there with you. You know, you're 100% ready to go and do work that's going to get you more work. You know what I'm saying? You don't just want to be spinning your wheels. I think a lot of people sit at their desk and they're doing work and they're doing this and that, but things aren't happening. You know, because you need to every time you sit down to draw, you need to have the mentality that no matter how complicated or simple this project is, I'm here to do my best drawing. And like we said, you're not going to be able to do your best drawing every time. But if you sit down with that mentality, every third or fourth drawing, you're going to be making a major breakthrough and you're going to be hitting that. And you're going to go, oh my God, I'm so excited about this. This is the best drawing I've ever done. And then when other people see that drawing, they're going to be wowed. If you're getting wowed by what you're drawing, other people are going to be wowed by what you're drawing. And they're going to want to get involved with what you're doing. You know what I'm saying? And that's going to allow you to do it more. So it's, you know, it's which cycle are you in? Are you in a cycle that's going in a negative direction? Or are you in a cycle that's going in a positive direction? Because if you're chilling in neutral, things are kind of passing you by. Yeah. And that can become, if that isn't already negative, it's basically headed towards negativity. Yes. So you always want to be taking little steps, even if it's the littlest of things. Having a whiteboard where you're writing down a couple goals for the week, you know, even if you're not ready to sit down and wrap your head around a five-year plan or this and that, you know, start small, but just get into the routine of it, because the routine is what it's going to make you easy. You know, as we were saying at this morning's workout, I think literally the difference between success and failure is getting up and saying, am I going to do this today? And the people that are in the routine of it, where they don't have to ask themselves that question, where they are just doing it automatically, they are already succeeding. If you're standing there saying, am I going to do this today? You're already creating such a challenge for yourself, because maybe 2 out of 7 days you're going to be that hyped up and that aligned, especially if you're not thinking in the ways of like, am I having the right nutrients? Am I getting the right amount of sleep? Am I all dialed in? Am I full of inspiration? Have I just totally opened books and listened to music and watched movies that are like getting me at peak levels of inspiration? That's another thing. Just inspiration loading is so important. You can't just sit down at your desk and start, you know, drawing. You can't run a marathon without putting fuel in. You need to constantly be pumping inspiration. So it's all these things. But if you can remove the one thing where you go, am I in the mood to do this? If you can create a routine that removes that from your life, you are going to succeed at what you want to do. That's the one hardest thing. And it's so simple. People would say, that's not it. That's definitely not it.
It is it.
That's it. That is the one thing. That is the difference between the people that are going to get to choose, have more choice in where their life is headed. Because you can never control it all, but you can control yourself a lot and your routines. Because, you know, some people think, oh, I'm just not that schedule oriented. I'm just not. Nobody is to begin with. You know what I'm saying? Nobody is. If there was one person out in the wilderness, they would have a different, you know, who knows what they would be doing. I don't even know.
And you got to figure out what works for you, because the experts will say this is the most ideal routine.
Right.
But the important thing is that you have a routine. Right. Not that it's like everybody else.
Some people might like to work late at night. Yep. Maybe your thing is that if you work every day, you get burnt out. Maybe you work every other day and then you produce as much as if you work for 2 days. There's no wrong way to do it. If you just keep experimenting with it and figuring it out, you know what I'm saying? Because then once if someone wants to have kids and stuff like that, you had kids early on. So you were kind of doing that from the beginning, but I didn't have kids till I was 10 years in. And then it like rocks it. You're like, oh my God, all my routines and schedules are being blown apart by these animals that are invading my life and I have to keep them alive, you know? Yeah. And so once you have to have the ability to then tear those down and build up new routines, and that's a real struggle. I mean, totally. that's something that I've been working with, trying to balance that family life with my, you know, kind of like building life with my illustration life, and that's a really full plate. Now, most people aren't going to be taking on, most people aren't crazy enough to try to take on that much stuff, but, you know, it's the same principles. It's that life is going to throw you curveballs, so be ready for it, you know what I'm saying? Yep. You know,
of the routine.
Yeah, if I was much more kind of like, you know, kind of, I've had my 10-year career, I've kind of gotten a little sloppier, I'm resting on my laurels a little bit, you know, I have done Adventure
Time. The world, yeah, of the most popular TV show of our decade.
I'm just going to chill and I'm going to work it out. And then my kids came along, I would never be able to find any time to do work. You know, I've had to try several different motivated schedules in the last 5 years, and that is really hard. To completely shift your schedule, have that not work. Okay, go back to the drawing board, try to completely shift it again. So, you know, as your life gets fuller and richer, it's one thing, you know, when you're in a cabin and you're a young guy and you're doing your own thing, or a young lady, you know, you're single, you're doing your own thing. It's a whole nother thing to then try to add on to that. And I know, you know, a lot of people do want to have a family, a lot of people do want to go do other things with their life, you know. So, you know, but again, it comes down to that. You have one brain. Train your brain to be able to work with, to be able to work with you. Have it be a reliable friend, not an undermining counterpart. Mm-hmm. You know, your brain should not be a liability to you. It should be your greatest strength.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? But it takes time putting in that mental work, getting to know your habits, being very real about your weaknesses, exploring your weaknesses, why are they there?
Yeah.
Exploring your successes, what's working about this? Why is this
that
working so well?
Self-awareness and reflection.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that all ties into the intuition. The more self-aware you are, the more introspective you are, the more in touch that your introspection and your intuition are best friends. They're talking to each other. So get that brain trust, you know, have your board of directors be the best, you know, just pick them all carefully and have that round table in your mind of like, all right, guys, what do we do now? And hear those different voices bouncing around and okay, let's try that out. Let's see how it works. You know, ready to fail, you know,
All right. Well, we better wrap it up. I gotta go catch a flight, but I'm so happy to have got to do this. It was amazing to see. It was a totally different experience. And I think it's like the holiest work. It just is amazing. And I'm so glad that you're doing it, man.
Well, as soon as I heard the podcast, I was like, this guy knows exactly what we're talking about. Yeah. It's going to get us both in the woods. Dude, it's going to be amazing. These kids are just going to be like overload of, you know, of energetic, inspirational information. You know?
Yeah, man, dude, it was so good. Thanks for having me.
All right.
All right, that's it. Thank you, Dan, for having me out. You are the man. You are so inspiring. You're doing amazing work. You're being so generous by having these people out on your land and teaching them all the good stuff that you know. Thanks, man. I really appreciate it. You are fantastic. I hope to see you soon, buddy. Okay, everybody, thanks for all the love and support. Hey, if you love this podcast, go give it a review on iTunes. That helps the show grow. Would mean a lot to me. Thanks, guys. Thanks for the love. Okay. Don't forget to check out our syndicate, Illustration Age. You can find the show at illustrationage.com/creativepeptalk. Thanks to all the music people. Got to thank Yoni Wolf of the band Y for our theme music. Thanks to Nate Utesh from the band Metavari for the other tunes. You can find their stuff at soundcloud.com/Metavari. Go check it out. Great work music. All right. Thank you, guys. I will be back next week with an episode of all kinds of good stuff. I'm planning it out right now, having a good time. All right. Thanks, guys. Speak soon. I had a hiccup right when I was going to say it. Stay pepped up.